I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to discuss emerging ethical dilemmas. The explosive advances in science and technology have brought with them new challenges in determining what's right and what's fair. We're going to talk about this with some great guests. Jessica Barron of Notre Dame's John J. Riley Center for Science, Technology, and Values, Maria Lieberman, a chemistry and biochemistry professor at Notre Dame, and Lieutenant Chuck Cohen of the Indiana State Police. Please join the discussion by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits@wfyi.org, or connecting with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about emerging ethical dilemmas. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Got some great guests here. Joining me in the studio is Lieutenant Chuck Cohen of the Indiana State Police. Welcome back to the show, Chuck.
Thank you very much.
It's good to have you here. And joining us by phone from South Bend, I presume, is Jessica Barron, who is with the Notre Dame John J. Riley Center for Science, Technology, and Values. Jessica, whoever came up with your title clearly did not work in radio.
That's true. Welcome. We can go by the Riley Center, though.
The Riley Center. We can do that going forward. Well, welcome to the program. It's good to have you here.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Certainly. Well, I want to start first. It always helps with these kind of conceptual programs to start just with some context. And I think I'll start with Chuck Cohen first. What are some of the ethical dilemmas that we're seeing now that perhaps we weren't seeing 15, 20 years ago?
Well, I think it's important to say that technology itself is neutral. It isn't ethical or unethical, but it is creating these new ways of thinking about ethics. One of the things we're running into as an example is a website that collects information and identifying information on people that try to solicit children online. That appears to be a very good ethical practice. But the other side of that website is for $250, if your name appears there, you can have that name removed. So is this a good thing or a bad thing that this website is collecting the information and then essentially extorting the people that have their information posted there so they can have it removed?
That isn't extortion. Well, in your area, Jessica, what would you say is an ethical dilemma we're facing that we wouldn't have been facing a decade or so ago?
So a number of items on our list we were facing in some way a little while ago, but if you look at the more technological ones like 3D printing, that's definitely something that that has come about in the last few years that we've seen just incredible advances with. So if you watch enough of the news or read enough of the news, you know that people have been able to print gun composites, and there are prints for grenades online. So you can go online and download those things, and presumably there are no checks for those. There are no ways of knowing who necessarily is downloading things and making them. So that's definitely bound to change, not just manufacturing if you're able to print household items at home, but present some security issues too.
Well, and some of this in terms of the technology, I know in a previous life I was the executive director of the Indiana affiliate of the American Civil Liberties Union, and we dealt with some privacy issues that popped up just because technology made some things possible that weren't possible before. Mm-hmm. For instance, you know, in terms of assembling a detailed profile of a person, a lot of that information was available as a public record in years past. What's changed now is that you, instead of having to spend a month or a month and a half assembling all of it, you can do it in about 2 minutes if you really know what you're doing. Are those the sorts of things we're talking about? I'll stay with you, Jessica.
Sure. Yeah, those are some of the things. But I think we have to remember that technology, too, for all of the transparency there, that for all of it that makes your information public and easily downloadable, it does allow you to protect yourself in a lot of ways as well. So if you are savvy about it and you educate yourself about what's out there and how you can protect yourself and your information, it can provide a lot of benefits to you as well. So But absolutely. I mean, I think there aren't enough people who think about the kind of information that ends up online, and that every time you push something in there, it collects cookies, it collects information about you and what you're interested in. So even if you go to your Facebook profile, you can see that it kind of knows a little bit about you already, depending on what you like.
Yeah, the ads seem to pop up and tell you exactly where you've been before. Mm-hmm. Well, and I guess what I would say, like to ask here is, you know, in terms of protecting yourself, why don't we start with that? And I'll take this one back to Chuck Cohen. How do you go about protecting yourself and protecting your privacy?
Well, I think the first thing is to understand what your digital footprint is. Everyone has a digital footprint. Unless you grew up in a cabin in Montana writing your manifesto, you're going to have some sort of presence online. To understand what that is, what information is out there.
That did not work out all that well for that guy.
I think
the rest of us, frankly.
No, I think that ended poorly. I think he's living in Colorado now, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, you have this information that's out there about you. To understand what information is out there, to know what someone can find out about you. And Jessica brings up a good point. You can do a lot of research on an individual that you might be hiring for a job, that might be watching your children. But at what point does doing that research become unethical? Do you have a right to know who their parents are, what their parents did for a living? Do you have a right to know what they were doing or saying in 2006 by accessing their Facebook profile or who their friends are? At what point does it stop being something that helps you protect yourself, protect your employer or where you work, protect your children, and start to become something that's intrusive on that individual?
Well, and Jessica, I think both you and Chuck have made the case that that mm-hmm. technology to some degree is neutral, but anytime there's an advance in knowledge, mm-hmm. it presents you with new dilemmas.
Right.
What are the big ones right now, at least in terms of what you do?
In terms of what we do and the list that we created, that we solicited ideas of all kinds of issues that were coming up from people all over the campus of Notre Dame, the most popular one, because we've allowed people to vote on these issues, seems to be adaptation to climate change. Data collection and privacy, what we were just talking about, does come in second. But adaptation to climate change seems like a big one. Obviously, we've been dealing with that for a while.
I mean, explain the ethical implications there.
So we start from the premise that climate change is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to adapt to it, we're going to have to make some very tough decisions about how we live. So one of our Riley fellows, Jessica Hellman, she studies adaptation to climate change. And we actually, if you go to our list, we've got a whole profile that we've set up on adaptation to climate change that gives you some resources to consult. She makes the case that, you know, this is something that we're going to have to change our behavior with. So not only the way our businesses behave, but the way that we personally behave in order to protect the environment.
And what sort of changes would she be talking about?
Things like water conservation. We've seen the growth of recycling programs and things like that recently, too. We're actually having a conference here in April, from April 8th to 10th, that anyone can come to, called Climate Change and the Common Good. And we're going to discuss sustainability issues, policy issues, as well as security issues, national security issues. So water and land are two big issues, right? Things that people fight over all the time. And those are good land and good water is becoming more scarce as the environment changes. So we're going to have people battling over those things, and we're going to have to figure out how to protect those areas. And we won't be able to protect them all. So it really is going to, that's a huge ethical dilemma, thinking about what areas you really pay attention to, which ones you can save, and maybe which ones you can't.
Well, and it seems like you probably also have to, if you're talking about this, really, really balance sort of individual free will, as it were,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, the idea of a community, an overarching community interest.
Right, absolutely. And, I mean, it becomes an economic issue as well when you realize that the people most vulnerable to climate change are communities that tend not to be able to protect themselves. So these are all things that we need to think about. I mean, we live in a developed nation where science is fairly well-funded, hopefully continuing to be well-funded. And so it really does become our decision who to help and in what situations to help them. And that is a really tough thing for humanists to grapple with.
We are talking about emerging ethical dilemmas here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, Chuck Cohen of the Indiana State Police, in terms of what you have to do right now, what would you say is the largest ethical dilemma that you face that, you know, this brave new world that we are in has presented you with?
Well, it's difficult to say that one is overarching the largest one out there. But one ethical dilemma we deal with literally on a weekly, if not daily basis, deals with actually encryption or being able to secure in a virtual safe an individual's data, whether doing it on a hard drive, doing it on a thumb drive, doing it in the cloud on a network server. If you go back in the history of the country, if a judge, an impartial magistrate, gave law enforcement, agents of the government authority to open a locked container, there always was a means to open that locked container. It doesn't matter whether it's a safety deposit box in a bank. It doesn't matter whether it is the most secure safe in a house. There was a physical way to open it. With encryption, it's actually gotten to the point now where no matter what order a judge signs, no matter what authority that judge gives, in some cases there's no way to open that container. And in some instances, what's contained inside that encrypted container might actually impact other people's safety, might actually be information related to individuals that are actively being put in harm's way. So that creates an ethical dilemma, because we also have issues where the right of someone not to criminate themselves. So can we compel that individual to unencrypt that?
Yeah, there are Fifth Amendment implications.
Absolutely.
That is interesting. What are you say that's a big one. What's another one?
Another one deals with things like cyberbullying, harassment, extortion. When is it cross the line from something where an individual is being a vigilante or even or to vigilantism, someone that may now I can get even with someone in a way I never could before? When is it something that's just unethical to when it's something that actually violates a criminal law? Where do those lines fall at? Where is it something that is just improper? Thinking about something like the Lori Drew instance. That's an instance back from 2006 and 2007, a woman that set up a fictitious profile on a social media site. Initially, it looked like it was something that was not criminal, but maybe unethical. Those kind of things we deal with. We also deal with on a wide variety of bases where you have some individual that posts something online. Jessica mentioned the 3D printing. Someone might put up schematics of how to 3D print a destructive device, might put up information of how to put the components together to commit suicide for one reason, but someone might use that information for a completely unintended purpose. And that creates an ethical dilemma sometimes where law enforcement, criminal investigators become involved in that information.
Well, and in terms of you know, I think we can argue that at some level that you know, knowledge itself, the technology itself, is neutral in most cases.
Mm-hmm.
It's really increasingly a question of application. Am I not correct, Jessica, about how we use this?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and there are lots of different ways to use lots of different technologies. And really, the important thing, I think, for people to understand is that new science and new technology requires the attention and informed participation of citizens. So we really do need to know what's out there, to know what kind of science people are doing, to know how it's being applied, and to be able to have a say in that, and not a shouting match, but an actual informed conversation about, you know, how this technology is going to be used, how it's going to be applied. So, you know, we've had tons of discussions in the press about autonomous systems and drones, for example.
Mm-hmm.
People are really just starting to enter that conversation about what they think is right and what they think is wrong when it comes to the use of autonomous systems in warfare. So, you know, we need people to educate themselves first and then learn about how the technology is being adapted and then really try to enter into that conversation.
And how do you do that at the Riley Center?
Well, at the Riley Center, we've got a number of different ways of doing it. And the list of ethical dilemmas really goes to the core of what we do, because we bring science, technology, and society together. We have 58 fellows from all different departments. We have historians, philosophers, theologians, biologists, chemists, engineers, literary scholars, people in the law school. And we try to bring them all together to talk about the kind of science that's going on and the kinds of new issues that it's bringing up. And we have events, we have conferences. So we try to hold discussions on these sorts of things. We try to get people to interact. So even though we do educate, we don't come to that from the place that people are deficient. in their understanding of science. We come to it really wanting to interact, really wanting to hear their questions, get their feedback, to know what the next steps are, to know what we as scholars then need to think about, what's important to people.
We are talking about emerging ethical dilemmas here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We again are talking about emerging ethical dilemmas. Right now, my guests are Jessica Barron, who is with the Riley Center for Science, Technology, and Values at Notre Dame, and Lieutenant Chuck Cohen of the Indiana State Police. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about emerging ethical dilemmas in science and technology. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You also can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We were talking just before the break, really, about how the Riley Center is trying to educate people about, these ethical challenges. I think may even be a better word than dilemmas, things that we have to meet, presented by science and technology. And I guess I'll Jessica Barron, I will throw that question back to you and say, you know, of those, what have been the conversations that have been the most heated?
Question. We've had some heated conversations. So even within the Riley Center, we have people who disagree with each other, right? This is the nature of an academic environment.
Well, it's sort of like humanity.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. So autonomous systems, for example, we have a research project called ETNSI, Emerging Technologies of National Security and Intelligence. You can learn more about that on our website. And we've got lots of people who talk about the ethics of drones, which is something I brought up a few minutes ago. And we've got people on all ends of the spectrum. So we've got discussions going on about whether we should develop drone technology at all, whether that's an ethical thing or not, or whether we should pour our resources into creating the most ethical drone possible, the best possible drone, and to keep that research going. So we've got people on every issue in between there. So all the grayscale in between those two opposing.
Out of curiosity, how would you create an ethical drone?
I don't know the specifics of the robotics, but there have been incredible advances in robotics and a lot of people talking about robot ethics. In fact, our director, Don Howard, is going to teach a class on robot ethics at Notre Dame in the fall. But there is technology that's being developed that tries to help robots or automated systems make decisions, that it tries to program algorithms to do that. So that's definitely something that's being pursued right now.
So would we be talking about a more sophisticated targeting system, or?
We would hope so. Yes, that would be part of it. But also to make a decision in a split second, this is something that you'd want a drone to be able to do, that if someone comes into the line of fire, in a civilian, mm-hmm. when do you stop? When do you pull back and say, okay, this isn't the right decision? You can't rely on a robot to do that right now, but we're certainly developing ways to get them to make those decisions.
Well, that creates a whole nother kind of conundrum then,
yeah.
Because obviously that comes very close to establishing a sense of consciousness.
Mm-hmm. It does, and it's something we talk about.
Boy, this is almost like a science fiction novel at this point, one of the movies they used to scare us with, that
yeah.
The machines become somewhat human and begin to take over the world.
Yeah, and this is one thing that I think, we set out to be pretty careful about with our list, is that we didn't want to make it a list of, the worst nightmares you could possibly have, or, what's the world coming to. We wanted to tell people what's on the horizon, because we want them to know that this stuff is being developed, and we really do want to get the feedback. Scientists should get the feedback. Government agencies should get the feedback about, how this is going on and how people feel about it. And we don't want people to feel scared. We want them to feel smart. We want them to feel knowledgeable about it. We want them to read about it. But you know, it is the kind of thing that you think you see in a science fiction book, but I can promise you there are people working on it.
Well, Chuck Cohen, in your work with the Indiana State Police, what is the ethical dilemma that you find personally the most difficult to resolve?
One of the challenges I think is information being collected, particularly when it involves children, and the potential unintended use or sometimes malicious use of that. I have two young children myself, and balancing the convenience of them using technology, like a mobile device that might be location aware and know where it's at a particular point in the physical world at the same time, and balancing that convenience for children and adults as well, and myself, knowing with what I do for a living, working with the Indiana State Police, knowing how that information can be collected, can be aggregated by someone that has malicious intent, and how it potentially can be used to damage that individual or somebody else. Like never before, because of technology and the way people are choosing to use that technology and communicate with others, we can attribute someone's communication, their location, their movement, and put that all over time to paint a really good picture, and one that's going to persist throughout their lifetime, of what they've been doing and when and what they've been thinking about. And how do you balance that convenience versus the potential malicious use of that?
We are talking about emerging ethical dilemmas in science and technology, and we are joined now by our third guest, Maria Lieberman, who is an associate professor of chemistry and biochemistry at the University of Notre Dame. Welcome to the program, Maria.
Well, thank you.
Certainly. It's good to have you here. We've been talking really about how, if I can summarize, that, you know, there's been an agreement so far that that science and knowledge to some degree are neutral. It's the application of many of these developments that creates the ethical challenges. And I was just asking Lieutenant Chuck Cohen of the Indiana State Police what dilemma he found personally the most difficult to resolve. I think I'll continue on that theme and ask you the same question. What's the one right now that troubles you the most?
In science and engineering?
Yes.
I think for me personally, it's just the pace of how fast our knowledge is changing, and ensuring that it's not just scientists and engineers who can follow these discussions and contribute to these discussions. Everybody needs to have a certain level of competence in understanding how the world is changing around them.
Well, could you give me an example?
I think we have. There's a lot of examples in environmental threats that everybody has a stake in whether the world is safe to live in, and yet there are some things where maybe there's a lot of fear out there and not much knowledge.
In what area are you referring?
Well, my field is nanoscience, nanotechnology, and I'm also an analytical chemist, and I'm interested in how people react to environmental threats. In nanoscience, there's a lot of discussion in my field about how to handle sort of emerging technologies and how to deal with the possibility that the things we're doing could have environmental impacts that are sort of new types of things happening. We're making new materials, and that can have new impacts. So that means that we have a responsibility when we're doing our work and when we're training students, we have a responsibility to be considering those things. And it also is going. These things are going to impact other people too, and so we have to think about that.
When you say one of the things that you're working on or developing that could have implications that people don't understand, I'm trying to get, for the non-scientists here, myself included, an example of something a little more concrete that would give me some idea what the stakes are.
Sure. Okay. Well, a lot of people now are interested in buying, for example, socks that have been treated with nanosilver, and that has an antibacterial function. It helps keep the socks from getting stinky, and so that's a consumer benefit. But what happens when you put those socks in the washing machine? Well, some of the nanosilver comes off, and it goes into the wastewater, and then it goes into a wastewater treatment plant. Wastewater treatment plants, a very important aspect of what goes on in the wastewater treatment plant is that there are special bacteria that sit there and help to break down toxic materials and organic matter in the wastewater so that it can be safely discharged. And if we are putting antibacterial compounds into our wastewater, that might be bad for those partner bacteria in the wastewater treatment plant.
So in some ways, it's one of the dilemmas here, then, is a question of unintended consequences.
Yes, it's always, yes.
Well, and Jessica Barron, to put it in a historical perspective, as I listen to this conversation, I'm thinking to some degree it sounds a little bit like the conversations that scientists in particular were having with the development of the atomic bomb and atomic energy.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And trying to figure out the moral implications there. Is that accurate?
I think so. I mean, that was a time when you had a number of scientists working together to make something that was going to affect their community in a positive way and another community in an extremely negative way. And there were a lot of people. I mean, we were lucky that a lot of the scientists on that project were, we have evidence of them having these ethical discussions when they knew exactly what was going on. You know, that's also an example of when it was too late. I mean, we really needed society to know what was going on and have those discussions before, you know, we dropped that bomb. And at this point, you know, before we developed the drone technology, to kill people from afar and to make sure it's either accurate or to have conversations about developing it, these are things that will change our lives, that will change the way we live. I mean, so if you think about even computers, how much computers have developed, or even 2D printing, how much that's affected our lives in the past, 30 years, and we're moving to 3D printing. I mean, I don't think we can even grasp all of the possible effects that these new technologies are going to have on us. But that's what scientists' job is to develop, right? And then we have engineers and people who apply this, and, we have ethicists, we have people who think about it, but they don't always communicate with the scientists, and they don't always communicate with society.
Well, and so many of those conversations, again, sticking with the period in history when we're talking about the development of the atomic bomb and atomic energy, were carried on, basically behind closed doors. Is part of the challenge here, and part of, frankly, I think what you're trying to do here is force these conversations out into the open?
Yes, we hope that's what will happen. And there is, there is more transparency, I think. I guess I wouldn't know if things were going on behind closed doors, but DARPA, who developed a lot of new military technology, has been pretty forthcoming about some of the things that they're developing. They set out the challenge for the driverless car that Google took up and made into reality. And there's a lot of military technology that if you look for it online, if you decide you're interested in the kinds of technologies that are being developed, you can find those things. And you can always, I would encourage people to ask questions, too, if it's something that you can't find out online, but you know there's a center or an organization working on it, so get in touch with the outreach person there and let people know what you're interested in and what you're curious about, and then we can plan better to do outreach events and really talk about these things with people.
Lieutenant Chuck Cohen.
There's a lot of debate right now about the ethics of drone use or unmanned aerial vehicle use domestically. And one of the issues on the debate is the ethics of it. A more malevolent government organization or law enforcement could use it to violate the civil liberties of individuals, of U.S. citizens. But that same technology on the other side of the coin can be used to rapidly respond to things like the tornado that happened last year in Henryville, Indiana, down in southeastern Indiana, can be used for things like making all of us safer when we go to watch the Indianapolis 500. And so you've got this debate occurring right now about the ethics of this particular technology. But again, like we've been saying during the segment, the technology itself is neutral. It's a matter of how that particular technology is deployed how it's used, and again, those unintended uses of it potentially.
We are talking about emerging ethical dilemmas here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Thomas, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly. Your question, please.
Yeah, it's mostly a comment. I'm really concerned mostly with genetic engineering and nano engineering and placing things out into our world that we have no idea how it will interact with the world's ecosystems. But at the same time, I'm also concerned about how people tend to put a lot of faith in technology fixing all of our problems, most of the problems which were created by technology. So just as a guiding principle, I would hope that we invest in research and development of things that are going to harmonize with the Earth and the ecosystems, and just use that as the guiding principle.
Thank you very much for the call, Thomas. Mario Lieberman, it sounds like from your earlier comments that that's actually one of the focuses in your overriding concern about some of the work that's going on in your field.
Sure. I think this is something that scientists have become a lot more aware of, and now we try, when we're designing things that might turn into products at some point, we try to take more of a life cycle approach to looking at how will this new entity interact with the world as it's being manufactured, as it's being used, and as it's being disposed of. And that really is to try to anticipate some of the problems that can occur when you make something that's really new and let it interact with the world, which is a very complicated system.
Well, and you have to make an ethical. I think the thing that is fascinating about this conversation is that there is a dilemma pretty much any way you go.
Yes.
Because as a scientist,
if you don't use the new technology, then you lose the potential benefits. I mean, if we had no cars on the roads, then we wouldn't be driving into deer and small animals and killing them, you know. And as it is, there's a fair amount of slaughter on the roads of small animals. Windmills knock down birds, and you know, so there's all these trade-offs that you have to. But you have to be open to learning about what all the consequences are of your technology.
Well, and I would think the challenge is maybe even a little more fundamental than that, too. I mean, if you're a scientist and an intellectual and you're dedicated to the pursuit of knowledge, do you have the right not to withhold that knowledge or to withhold that discovery? Regardless of the consequences.
Well, the consequences are part and parcel of the knowledge. I mean, I think there are many, many researchers who find the social and economic and all those other consequences hard to kind of wrap their minds around. But often it's very intellectually stimulating to follow an idea in that direction and say, okay, so all right, I know what the solubility properties of this molecule are. How is it going to interact when it gets into a river or into a stream?
What's it actually going to do?
What's it actually going to do?
Create how, right. You know, what is the ultimate impact going to be?
Right.
There's been a
tendency also for research projects to become more interdisciplinary. So it's now more likely, I think, that a researcher who's creating nanomaterials might have a colleague who is interested in environmental impacts of nanotechnology and be set up for that collaboration to take place.
We are talking about emerging ethical dilemmas here on No Limits. I am John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about emerging ethical dilemmas in science and technology. My guests are Jessica Barron, who is with the Notre Dame John J. Riley Center for Science, Technology, and Values, Lieutenant Chuck Cohen, who is with the Indiana State Police, and Maria Lieberman, who is Associate Professor of Chemistry and Biochemistry at the University of Notre Dame. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, Chuck Cohen, actually, during the break, we were chatting a little bit about the issue of drones and safety, the ethical implications there. And I should say, are we all in agreement? I mean, part of what makes this, at least in my mind, I'm probably wildly oversimplifying here, is that an ethical dilemma is one in which you've got a cost pretty much any way you go, and you have to balance those costs. Is that fair?
I definitely agree with that.
Okay. Maria and Jessica, are you in agreement too? Or
yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah. it's for all of these issues, I think that it can go either way.
Yeah. So Chuck Cohen, we were talking a bit about the drone technology and the implications for safety and sort of a basic ethical consideration.
Well, definitely. If you look at it, there's no question that an unmanned aerial vehicle can be used for malicious purposes domestically. As camera technology improves, as things like thermal imaging and that technology improves, absolutely, it can degrade individual civil liberties. But the other hand of the equation, if you have a lost hiker, if you have something like the tornado I mentioned in the last segment, if you have another thing where law enforcement, as an example, needs to get an elevated view of something, it is actually much safer to put a small unmanned aerial vehicle as opposed to a plane or a helicopter. If you look at it both for the pilot and the passengers in that plane or helicopter, and also people on the ground, because the reality is things that go up do tend to come down from time to time. Over the years, over the 80 years of NSA police, we have crashed, unfortunately, both helicopters and aircraft, and have individuals on those have gotten hurt. So the ability to use an unmanned vehicle to do things, again, like look for lost hikers, look for a vehicle that might have gone off an embankment, deal with natural disasters and other things that we routinely use aircraft for, can make not just the police officer safer, but the individuals that are below that vehicle safer as well.
Jessica Barron, what is the, since you take a pretty much big picture approach to this, what is the ethical dilemma that you see emerging out of all of this that most of us just aren't even aware of yet? We haven't even begun to think about it.
Well, that's an interesting question. One of the things that surprised me most when I started looking into this was when I was looking into the human enhancements, which is another thing that made our list. Some of the technology that's being developed, especially for the military, different kinds of pharmaceutical enhancements and different kinds of biological enhancements and different kinds of technological enhancements are all really, really, for me at least, straight out of the science fiction books that I liked to read growing up. And I thought to myself, wow, we're really doing this? I mean, we're really making exoskeletons for American soldiers. So some of those things that you just see a picture and you're really shocked that this is legitimate research going on and tax dollars are funding it and people do have a say in how it's used. But so the human enhancements issue is one that I really didn't see coming until I sat in on our affectionately nicknamed weapons ethics class a few semesters ago and learned a little bit about what was going on in the military from a former general who co-teaches the class, Russ Bob Lattice. And he had a lot of interesting things to say.
So what is a human enhancement? Can you give us a real quick description or definition?
Oh, me?
Jessica, yeah, please.
Sorry.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
The fact that you're on the phone means that it's harder for you to get the visual cues. So.
It is. I'm
yeah.
sorry.
No, not a problem.
So we do have there are a number of different kinds of enhancements you can use, and we have enhancements in everyday life as well. So if you think about even antidepressants or stimulants of some sort, those are meant to enhance the way that you interact. They're
meant to enhance your mood. And theoretically, with antidepressants and things like stimulants for ADD, they're meant to bring people with a deficiency up to, up to a sort of standard level. But people who are using those who don't have those deficiencies, who aren't depressed or aren't specifically for something like Ritalin or Adderall, that is giving people an enhancement. We've heard lots of doping stories out of baseball and cycling. And
well, that's where I was going to go. Lance Armstrong is in an awful lot of trouble right now because of using performance. And this may take us into areas that this conversation, but in some ways it sounds like in this, how much of this is situational, I guess, is where I'm going, is the context. Chuck Cohen, I think, has alluded to that a couple of times where, he says that you can use a drone, for example, for a good purpose or for a bad purpose. But, in this case, we seem to be saying that if you look for human performance enhancements in terms of military defense or even enhancing a student's performance in school, that's okay. But if you do it to win a race or a game, that's not okay.
Yeah, and that's an interesting dilemma. I mean, and that's where the policy issues start to come in, too, and that's where we start to need to be more efficient and more knowledgeable about how these policies are made and who gets to make the decisions about when is a legal instance and when is an illegal instance to use an enhancement, for example. So on college campuses, obviously, we do have a big problem with stimulants. But does that count as an unfair advantage? Well, people are having those discussions, and I'm not sure where I come down on that. But there's a large spectrum of responses to that. And in cycling is my favorite sport. So I've been following that quite a bit. And, it's the same thing in baseball. If everyone is using these things, then what choices do you have, and are they really wrecking your body, and is it really your choice to use them or not in order to win, even if it's going to wreck your body? Are you the one who gets to accept those consequences, or does a larger body of people get to decide for you whether that's legal and ethical for you to partake in?
We are talking about emerging ethical dilemmas in science and technology here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, Maria Lieberman, I'm going to ask the same question there. In your field, what is the emerging ethical challenge that for most of us just isn't even on our radar screen? What's the thing that we should start thinking about now?
I think there's a lot of developments in the area of personalized medicine and genetic testing that could really have impacts on the way people see themselves and the way they interact with the healthcare system.
Could you give me an example?
Well, a good example would be home pregnancy tests, which have, I think many people have experienced or used those. And it's, took a test that used to be done in a doctor's office and take weeks and turned it into something a person could do at home in the privacy of their own home.
And the ethical dilemma there is?
The ethical dilemma is then it changes the relationship of the patient and the healthcare provider.
So right? it shifts the sense of responsibility, or?
Yes, and it raises raises questions about the test. So there are now, you can now do tests that will tell you whether you carry certain genes, for example. You can look and see if you have a gene that's associated with development of certain types of breast cancer. And those kinds of, that information is something that I believe people have a right to find that information out. But sometimes the information by itself is not very useful from a healthcare perspective. And so, again, then that starts to become a dilemma of balancing how much resources people are spending on finding out this information when there may not be anything you can do. It may not change the treatment of the patient or they're indeed, you know, knowing that you have an increased risk for something doesn't tell you that it's your fate.
So it's the question of how we deliver the news to these people.
And not just to these people, but, you know, if there are privacy issues, right?
Yes, privacy considerations. So. We are talking about emerging ethical dilemmas in science and technology here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Hello, good afternoon.
Certainly. Your question, please.
I'd just like to know with the panelists how they feel about the intersection between psychosocial sciences and technology, the ability to use nanotechnology to improve the human ability. And in relation to Oscar Pistorius, and it's how that's recently going to shape the nature of the future in this matter.
So this is like this is Maria. Sorry, this
yeah,
is
Maria
like
Lieberman.
The human enhancements. Will other runners want to, you know, cut off their feet and install high tech?
No. With just regards to the ethical considerations for the psychosocial nature of these added enhancements, and especially, say, the MLB decides to somehow allow a certain listing of steroid enhancements in 10 years and the psychosocial effects that could have and the impact that it's going to have on sports in general.
Thank you very much for the question, Andrew. I'll throw that one first, I think, to Jessica Barron.
Okay. Well, I think... You know, we're already starting to think about sports, for example, in a new way. We're starting to. We didn't elect anyone to the Baseball Hall of Fame this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we were concerned that they were all doping, and had proof that some of them were as well. If we do somewhere down the line allow a certain number of substances to become legal, which you know, I think there are some banned substances on the list that are probably fine. That will change the way people think about sports and about competition. It'll change the nature of being a fan of something. I mean, you wonder if people will have to list that on there. I guess do we have baseball cards anymore? I don't know.
Yeah,
you
we know. Do. I've got a small son. I know
okay.
We have baseball cards.
You're going to have to list that on your baseball cards, exactly what human enhancements you're taking. And do we have a right to know what these people are taking, what they're putting into their body in order to give them some sort of advantage? And that goes outside of sports too. I mean, do we have a right to know if our students are on enhancement drugs? I mean, I used to teach and I wouldn't feel comfortable knowing that. I wouldn't know what to do with that information. But it is something that might come up in the future when you look at college admissions and in very competitive areas. What information do we have a right to have from people? That will definitely be an issue.
And I want to throw the question I asked Jessica and Maria to Chuck Cohen, too. What, in your area, what is the ethical challenge that we should be thinking about that isn't even really on anyone's radar screen right now?
One that comes to mind immediately deals with some of the things we're talking about with human enhancements and drugs. As you look at something like OxyContin, as you look at Vicodin, those are drugs, particularly the time-release pain relievers, that on the market help people that are in immense pain, excruciating pain, debilitating pain. But then if you look at that from a misuse, those same drugs, those same pharmaceuticals, then when they're abused, can cause debilitating injury to individuals and to entire families and generations of families. That same time-released pill that relieves someone that's suffering from pain, from that excruciating pain, when ground up and snorted or ground up and inhaled, can cause ripple effects of pain for another individual and for that individual's entire family. So does that mean that we take this drug and take it off the market? How do we balance to the relative good versus relative harm of some of the pharmaceuticals? And those prescription drugs, those of us in law enforcement are finding in many instances are heavily being abused by individuals and then lead to secondary and tertiary crimes that are associated with someone trying to find money to buy additional drugs to support an addiction.
Yeah, and I'm going to ask the question of Jessica Barron and Maria Lieberman and I'll start with Jessica that I asked Chuck a little earlier. Personally, what is the hardest of these issues for you to resolve at a human level?
For me to resolve, it is hard for me to understand, you know, when I look back through our list, we have things like hacking into medical devices. It's always hard for me to resolve why someone would want to do such a thing, right? I mean, I know it's technologically feasible. I know technology moves forward no matter what. But why you would apply something like that in that particular context to harm another human being. And I think, you know, the sorts of policies that we need to make to deal with some of these issues, you know, I find it hard to grapple with the cost that some of these things that we'll have to decide on. So for adaptation to climate change, for example, who's going to suffer and who's going to benefit? I mean, these are the things that we wrestle with at the Riley Center, you know, including what Chuck brought up about pharmaceuticals. I mean, there are pros and there are cons, and that's what we do. There aren't necessarily right answers, but the ways to go about it and the ways to talk about it, that's what we do.
Well, and some of it you could also, I think, add into that list sort of the extension of life issues too, mm-hmm. which we haven't really talked about during this hour at all. That's a whole nother subject. Maria Lieberman, what personally, which one is the hardest for you to resolve?
Well, I have to agree with Jessica. One of my areas of research is detection of low-quality pharmaceuticals, it's very bewildering when you realize how much really low-quality pharmaceuticals are out there, and how much they're directed at developing countries. It's really heartbreaking to see. And it's the thing that I find hard to deal with as a scientist is that the problem of detecting these drugs is a solved problem in our world and in the developing world. The resources that we take for granted just aren't available. And so that problem of limited resources in some parts of the world and not in other parts of the world is really it makes you think.
And I am afraid that is going to have to be the last word today. I want to thank all of you. I've learned a lot from this conversation. I've learned from all of you. Jessica Barron, thank you very much for spending this time with us.
Thank you.
Certainly. And you are with the Notre Dame Riley Center for Science, Technology, and Values. I got it out right once during the program. Lieutenant Chuck Cohen of the Indiana State Police, thank you for being with us. Thank you for coming back. This is your second visit here.
Thank you for inviting me again.
Certainly. It's good to have you here. And Maria Lieberman, who is Associate Professor of Chemistry and Biochemistry at the University of Notre Dame. Thank you very much for spending this time with us.
Thanks for having me, John.
Certainly. Well, we will be back next week here on No Limits. I want to thank all of our listeners for joining us and for calling and taking part in the conversation. We'll see you next week. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.